Today on the 10 12 podcast, Andy, Jamie, and myself are recapping week 8 from around the Big 12. Plus, Wild Ute joins us to talk about who are Utah fans, how do they really feel about joining the Big 12, Vegas versus Kansas City for the men's basketball championship tournament, and why it's time for us all to just get along.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 14 teams in the Big 12 Conference Plus, Colorado, Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah. We are the flagship show of the 10-12 Network. Find every show on the network at 1012network.com. That's T-E-N, the number 12, the word network. And we are partners with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network. Go and check them out. I'm your host, Philip Slavin. Thank you for joining us today. It is a Monday. We are here to recap the weekend that was with my two favorite podcasting people. You know them, you love them, but you know what? Every podcast is someone's first, so let's introduce them because that's what we need to do. She is the vibe queen of the 10-12 Network, JSJ, Jamie Steyer Johnson.
You have to clarify podcasting people in case someone decides to tell your kids that they're not your favorite people.
I mean, my wife could listen to an episode at some point, and it would be my luck to say that. Then she'd be like, oh, so one of your favorite people
I just
is a
like
different
the very
woman
specific
than me?
Disclaimer. That's really well done.
Thank you. Look, language matters. What words you use are very, very important. Never rush a tweet. Also joining us, I mean, he's not the vibe king, but we still love him. He is Andy Mitz.
I'm just glad that you use such definitive language to say we are your favorite podcasting people. Of all the people you could have picked that have been on this show before, I'm glad that, you know, Jamie and I are the two favorite podcasting people that you have. So,
I mean, at this point, I've spent more podcasting hours with the two of you than anybody else, which is,
That is
saying a lot. I mean, if I didn't like you this much, I would have replaced you long ago. So,
good luck.
There are plenty of fish in the podcasting sea, but none quite.
For me, at least. Not for Jamie.
you hit the nail right on the head on that.
Yeah, exactly.
We are not alone today. We're going to do something a little different off the top here. Don't worry, we'll recap the weekend that was. We got a lot of thoughts, notes, and of course, the latest news on Quinn Ewers, if you haven't heard about that as of yet. We're going to start the show off a little bit different. Decided to welcome a guest here because there's been a lot of talk about Utah ever since, I mean, honestly, like Utah has been building a reputation for themselves as far as a fan base goes for some time over the last year, ever since the Pac-12 got in trouble and all the Big 12 rating the Pac-12 and George Kliavkoff versus Brett Yormark and yada, 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 really started getting on. And of all the fan bases who have been the most vocal, I think, has been Utah. And I want to find out exactly who the Utah fan base is, how they really feel about the Big 12, and discuss some of the thoughts that they've shared on social media. So I'm excited to have the man known on Twitter as Wild Ute joining us today. I'm just going to shorten it to Wild. How you doing, man?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for bringing me on the 10-12. Happy to be here.
We are thrilled to have you today. So I reached out on Twitter, sent out what I call an olive branch tweet, and just said, hey, look, there's been a lot of vitriol. Some of it I think deserved, but we can explain that and break that down. Towards or between Utah and Big 12 fans, about them joining the Big 12 and their thoughts on the Big 12 conference. And, you know, maybe some of it's not fair. Maybe some of it's a bit social media heavy. Okay, let's start with this. To me, like the loudest and most vocal Utah fans, and I understand those are voices that tend to rise to the top when it comes to social media. But those are the voices that have represented Utah to Big 12 fans for the last year plus, really since it was announced that USC and UCLA were leaving and all the rumors and whirlwind and everything began. the Utah fans that have risen to the top have been the most ardently anti-Big 12, ugly toward Big 12, and arrogant about Utah and the Big 12. Mm. Now, since it was announced that Utah would join the Big 12, you know, we have tried to find Utah fans worth following. There is some. There are a few. I'm being us, and we're still looking, but the most vocal have remained the most arrogant and anti-Big 12, it seemed. Which, you get why Big 12 fans feel a certain way about Utah fans. You burned your house down. We welcome you to ours, and you're already trying to tell us how to fix ours and what's wrong with it before you've even had a chance to unpack your bags. We'll get to the Kansas City and Vegas in a minute. Look, I'm fine with thoughts and opinions. The blatant and brazen statements that the Big 12 should start changing things to adapt to the Pac-12 way of doing things is not great. And so what I want to do today, and the reason we have Wild here, is I feel like Wild is a guy who is strongly opinionated, but not in a necessarily negative way. And so I want to get a good view on Utah fans. Like, what are Utah fans like? What are they really like? And how do they really feel about joining this conference? Is it just that a handful of the most vocal have taken the charge and everyone else has let them? Or is it just that the, I don't know, let's say more level-headed voices have just kind of fallen to the background and not been able to be heard quite as well? So, Wild, who is Utah?
Utah is a school of underdogs. Okay. So Utah, I think that before we get into what Utah fans are like and how Utah fans feel about joining the Big 12, I think that we need to talk about the history of Utah because it's going to give some context. So Utah in 2011 was a G5 school beforehand, and then they were invited by the Pac-12 into the conference. And at that time, Utah had been petitioning, trying to get into a Power 5, Autonomous 5 conference for many years. And the Pac-12 and gave that invite at the time. So one thing to always think about, though, guys, that's often forgotten is the Big 12 never invited Utah, you know, back in that time frame. The Pac-12 was the conference that invited Utah. So Utah was a perennial underdog before that invite. Utah is actually the initial BCS buster. Back in 2004 and in 2008, they went to two BCS games before this new and more recent era of college football. And so a lot of Ute fans had a lot of pride in the football program because of that prior success. Well, it took many years in the Pac-12 era to build up recruiting and to actually get to a place where we could compete. And after about 5 or 6 years, Utah started winning more and more Pac-12 games. And it took a long time, but over the last couple of years, Utah's actually won the Pac-12 championship. And so Ute fans feel pretty proud that we came from essentially nothing to become a relevant program, because we've always been an underdog. And I know Big 12 fans might not feel that way, but Utah fans feel that way. They see themselves as underdogs. And then all this happened, right? All this momentum, conference realignment happened. Utah was just stabilizing in the Pac-12, just building the program almost up to a college football playoff caliber program right there on the brink. And USC and UCLA lead to the Big Ten. Well, because of all this momentum and all the success that Utah's had, Utah felt and still feels to a degree really loyal to the Pac-12 conference. They gave them the invite, the success built there, the brands built. And so Utah was staunch in wanting to stay in the Pac-12 conference for all those reasons. And plus for recruiting, Utah recruits heavy out of California, and having those California ties is big into really building the program up in the future too. And then there's the aspect of BYU entering into the Big 12 conference. And of course, BYU and Utah, the Holy War and that rivalry. So there was just a lot going on, and all that realignment battling between Ute fans primarily and Big 12 fans and trying to keep the Pac-12 to stay alive versus getting gobbled up by the Big 12 at the time created a lot of hard feelings, right? Back and forth hard feelings amongst Ute fans and Big 12 fans. And that makes sense because it got pretty dang nasty. Everyone knows that before that invite came. So that's all background context. And that's like from a Ute fan perspective. Ute fans still feel like they are the underdogs and that we have earned respect, especially on the football field, because of all the work and the coaching that we put in to build momentum. And oftentimes, Ute fans will feel slighted if a different conference, people that haven't played them, schools haven't played them, will automatically discount that success because we have that feeling of an underdog. So that's the psyche of a Ute fan. Just to back up a little bit, like the honest, true psyche of Ute fans. What are Ute fans like? Ute fans are great people. They're just like Big 12 fans. I mean, they're passionate about their school. They're loud because they're proud of the success. And they love football primarily. And Ute fans and BYU fans are kind of psycho with each other, just like, you know, Iowa and Iowa State, or just like Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. You kind of lose your mind and say some crazy stuff, right? I mean, like, and so there's that dynamic where Ute fans and BYU fans will never really get along too well. But Ute fans, they're just loyal fans, good folks, really. They're not a bunch of jerks. I mean, on social media, it does look like that way. You said that, Philip. But really, if you met Ute fans in real life, they're great people. They're really hospitable. If you ever come out to a game, Salt Lake City, they'll treat you right in the tailgate lot. They're not gonna badmouth you or anything else. But really, that's how Ute fans really are outside of social media. And how do Ute fans feel about joining the Big 12? It's freaking bittersweet, guys. Like, just like I told you with the Pac-12 giving us that invite and building momentum, having the recruiting pipeline in California, freaking hurts to lose that type of momentum. And like being in a conference where you're building and building and building to all of a sudden have it taken away because USC and UCLA wanted to leave because Utah and others were beating you and USC wasn't the brand that they used to be and they wanted to build that. That's frustrating. And so Ute fans, it's very bittersweet to go to really any other conference, but Ute fans wanted to stay and try to keep the pack alive because of all of the success, the things that we've already talked about here. So, It's complicated as far as the move to the Big 12 because you've got the BYU component, the hard feelings because of the realignment move and everything. And it's just been a really messy transition since trying to join the conference since. But ultimately, Utah will integrate. Utah will be a great member of the Big 12, have a very passionate fan base, and it's going to be a good fit. It's just going to take a few years and a little while.
Every conference needs a villain. It sounds like Utah is ready to, you know, step into that role. But no, I mean, you know, you talked about the 2011 kind of conference realignment. And I think the thing to keep in mind there is that the Big 12 was on the brink of dissolving themselves because of Missouri and Texas A&M leaving. You know, I don't think that they were really in a position to try to be branching out to a new area of the country. They had to solidify where they were. And so like, I feel like West Virginia was kind of the, you know, they were already a Power Six because of Big East. And then you bring in a TCU, which was at the time the most successful G5 school because of what Gary Patterson did. And yes, Utah was definitely on the brink. And there were talks about bringing additional teams in. But I think the part that, at least for me, it seems to me like there's hard feelings towards the Big 12 because the Big 12 supposedly, you know, put the final nail in the coffin for the Pac-12 when in reality it's the Big 10 and it's USC and it's UCLA. And there's a lot of animosity, it seems, geared towards the Big 12, which is where they're jumping into because they would rather be back in the Pac-12. But honestly, the Big 12 didn't really do anything to destroy the Pac-12. You know, USC, UCLA jumped first. Colorado was talking about coming to the Big 12 because they were worried about the TV negotiations. And then Oregon and Washington jumped and put the dagger in it. So I think that there's a little bit of, I guess, resentment from Big 12 fans that are like, well, Utah's coming in and telling us how we should do things and telling us, you know, about how much better they are when they're having to jump out of that conference. Like there's just, it feels a lot like it's a, we don't want to be here, so we're just going to tell you how you should do things, which reminds us a whole lot of Texas.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that the Utes fans are very vocal. And like, as you guys have seen, and like, especially on social media and everything. And I think that it warrants consideration and conversation about how things have changed. I mean, like, I get the thought process that like, hey, Utes are the most vocal about wanting and asking and like, and bringing up topics that might be uncomfortable, like maybe moving a conference championship game. But I would ask you guys to consider, like, I mean, the conference makeup's different than it used to be. Texas and Oklahoma are now gone, so there's less Midwest teams. You've got more mountain and desert teams here. You've got West Virginia and Cincy out there. So like, why do the old ways have to stay when you've got opportunities to go place like Vegas, like if like a, for a basketball tournament? Like, I realize the KC experience is awesome, but like Brett Your mark is a freaking baller, right? This guy is amazing. And like, this guy's going to get max branding and PR. Like, so why not even give it a consideration to move the game around to build the brand? That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, and I get that's a cool experience, but like, if we're really going to try to build this thing, I guess, like, I don't understand why folks get so upset just bringing that topic up.
For one, they've moved it around in the past. The most successful place it's ever been was Kansas City. And part of that is because Kansas City and the everything around the arena are focused on nothing but keeping everybody in and around the arena and putting the focus on the basketball tournament. And I think the argument is every time a Utah fan talks about like all the different things you can do in Vegas, it's like, but that's not the point. Like, if you want to go to Vegas for all the things to do in Vegas, go to Vegas anytime you want. There's 360 other days of the year you could go do that. When the Big 12 tournament's going on in Kansas City, we're there because that's what the whole point is. Like, it's about the Big 12 tournament and everything that's done around that, around the arena and around, like, a giant chunk of the city is around that event. Whereas taking it to Vegas, it's another thing in Vegas. Mm-hmm. I mean, Yormark has hinted at Vegas, and I think they're going to find ways to do things out west. I don't know that. I don't see that being moving the basketball championship. And it's interesting. I think the other thing is that particular event is so well attended because of its location, because of the fan bases it's near that do so well and travel so well for it. And the Utah fans coming and saying, well, you should do it here instead, because it does come across as you should do this here because we like it here and it's more convenient for us. And I understand that. Look, I understand the idea of you're having to come into a new space that wasn't what you wanted, where you wanted to be initially. I'm like putting myself in a Utah fan's shoes. We wanted the Pac-12 to stay. We built this before. We were invited to a Power 5 conference. I mean, at the time in 2011, I imagine they would have picked the Pac-12 over the Big 12, even if the Big 12 had offered an invite. I don't know if they did or not. So let's sit that. But like, have built themselves into a team that is consistently winning the Pac-12. And now you have to go over to some other place with another group of schools where a few of your friends are coming with you, but like it's a whole new thing.
Right.
And so you would like that conference to try and do something to help make you feel more welcome as opposed to, I mean, look, it's gotten very vitriolic between Big 12 fans and Utah fans on social media. And I would think at some point, y'all, we gotta calm it down a little bit. But I believe wholeheartedly Brett Yormark will look for ways to do things out west to incorporate those schools more and to utilize Vegas. Like, he's talked about New York. He's talked about Vegas. We're going to have a bowl game in Mexico. We're going to have a basketball game probably every year down in Mexico because he wants to expand the brand into all these different places. So, like, I wholeheartedly believe Big 12 events will occur in Vegas. I think when something for Utah fans to know about Big 12 fans is, like, coming after – of all the things to come after – like, I don't think the basketball tournament was the one to choose. You want to say we should move the football championship game to Vegas? I don't think there'd be a whole lot of pushback. People are like, all right, like, Arlington's cool. That's great. That's fine. You want to go to Vegas and go to that stadium? Okay. We want to move around. Like, that's fine. I would choose more wisely than the basketball tournament and trying to move it from Kansas City.
And the other point I think to consider here is, like we said, the people that are most passionate about it, it's not that it's every single person in the Big 12 that's going to get really invested in this kind of conversation, but the kind of fan bases that are going to jump in there are going to be, you know, the local ones that are bringing a lot of people. So you're going to have Kansas, which they could get very passionate, obviously. And
just
then
a little bit.
You're going to have a lot of people from Iowa State,
the most online fan base.
I was
going
to say.
But they have an extremely similar mindset to what you describe with Utah. Obviously, our history is not the same with coming from the G5 into a Power 5 conference and having that aspect of it. But the rest of it sounds extremely similar, where we were very, very nearly left on the outside if the Big 12 had dissolved during that conference realignment. Like, we're talking a hair's breadth. And So that certainly led to a lot of really strong feelings, especially regarding realignment. And you've had a lot of, difficult times in some of our premier programs that end up with just feeling like, okay, you know, you're really struggling through the mud to try and find success. And so when you have a couple of fan bases that are at odds about things that they feel very strongly about, and then they're coming at each other and they don't know each other that well enough to really realize, okay, we're coming at this for like very, very similar reasons, and finding that common ground and understanding that aspect of it, I think that's when you end up with the frankly like mess that you've got on social media right now, which I don't, I mean, at least everything I've seen hasn't been like devolving into like doxing people or threatening. So at least it's that much of a success, but like it's going to be pretty contentious, I think, for a while until everyone really learns to like adjust to each other, or at least settles into the routine of like, okay, we're going to poke fun at, you know, Utah, and they're going to poke back at Iowa State or whatever. But for right now, it's just like very all over the place.
It's a really low bar, but the fact that we are not stooping to Iowa and Missouri levels of online fandom is very, very promising at this point. So, but no, I mean, the other thing I will say is that like the Big 12's identity isn't wrapped up in college basketball. They have been literally the best and deepest college basketball conference for the last decade. The one thing that they absolutely unequivocally do right is the Big 12 championship. And so that is like the one thing that you will probably see, especially for a Big 12 conference that is trying to make up ground and trying to build on the successes that they do have and branch out into new areas. I think that's where a lot of the pushback comes from, right? Because the one thing that absolutely is not have any problems with it right now is the Big 12 basketball tournament. If you want to build on things, you don't wreck the thing, or you don't change a lot about the thing that is going absolutely as best as it possibly can, you know, that is super solid, that you don't have to worry about until you've looked at a bunch of other options of things that you can do. And so I think that's where most of it comes from, is that there's a reason that every single announcer who's ever done anything in the Big 12 tournament talks about how it's the best one in the entire country. It's the most passionate. It's basically sold out for every single game because of the fan bases that are there. And yes, Iowa State and Kansas State fans do help sell out the sessions that, you know, some of those teams aren't in. But there's a lot of passionate fans in Kansas City who also just come to watch the tournament. Like, I know multiple times after Kansas is gone, I still go to the games to watch the tournament because I love watching Big 12 basketball. And it's very entertaining to watch in person. And so I don't think if you go to a place like Vegas or you go, you know, anywhere else where there's a bunch of other stuff to do, you're going to get that kind of attention. And it's worked so well for the Big 12 in the past. That's what their identity is wrapped up in. So until there's a really, really compelling reason to go somewhere else, I just don't think that there's going to be any appetite to move the tournament from Kansas City.
You guys have compelling responses. That's a lot of the feedback about what's said on social media. And maybe there is a good place to meet here where a football championship game on a rotating basis could go in Vegas. And like this is a little bit subversive. Okay, let's back up a little bit. Las Vegas has a reputation for Ute fans. It's called Rice Eccles South. So Ute fans fill up Vegas for football championship games and make it a home field advantage. Do you guys really want to know why Utah wants Vegas? It's because it becomes a home field advantage. Just like Kansas City seems, as far as an outsider stepping in, like a big home field advantage for KU, K-State, and Iowa State. It seems that way, and that's great and everything, but Vegas really is that for both Utah and BYU. So that's what's not being said that's lurking underneath this too, especially for football.
Of course. Oh, look, there's always going to be some bias. I'll wrap up the basketball chat on this. Like your mark, as I have been told, like your mark was a little bit like, yeah, Kansas City, that's the best we can do, until he was there the first time. And then he came away understanding, and it's why they've pushed to lock that down and continue to build the relationship with not just the arena, but the city of Kansas City, and the commitment that the city itself has to basketball as a sport and to keeping the basketball tournament there as well.
And for those Utah fans that want to keep the dream alive of taking it to Vegas, I will note, because it was pointed out to me, Brett Yormark in his comments talked about keeping it at the T-Mobile Center, which also happens to be the name of the arena down in Vegas. So theoretically, he could look at that option. But I don't think the way he was talking about it makes me think that he was meaning Kansas City. But there are definitely some people that are more than willing to, you know, poke at some conspiracy theories there.
Hopefully there's a long future of this upcoming Big 12 conference in which we can discuss it.
Exactly.
I think you've got a lot of fan bases who have been through, who are very traumatized and have been through a lot over the last, let's call it at least the last 3 years between the Big 12 and its near demise and the Pac-12 and its actual demise. Throw in all the past trauma that the Big 12 has gone through. And I think you have a bunch of fan bases that what you're going to find Utah fans, and I hope you can find it quickly, is once you join the Big 12, we will hate each other to no end. But it's a very brotherly relationship in that we can say whatever the hell we want about each other, but you stay the away from my brother or we will all come at you with a passion and anger that will scare every other fan base away. And I look forward to introducing Utah and Arizona, Arizona State and Colorado back into that. I do think it's going to take some time for everyone to kind of get their nerves calmed. And some people may never come back around, but I am intrigued to have Utah join. I want to wrap up on this. I want to read a Kyle Whittingham quote because this quote is fantastic. Kyle Whittingham, talking about USC, quote, they've got a Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback, so they're going to make some things, and that's just the way it is. But we've got ourselves a pig farmer at quarterback, so we're proud of that guy, too.
That sums it up. That sums it up right there. Like I told you guys, at the core of this, like the Ute fans that have been around for a long time feel like underdogs that are fighting to try to get national respect. And the fact that Bryson Barnes is a pick farmer, walk-on that just beat the Heisman Trophy winner, it tickles freaking Ute fans. It's freaking amazing. It's awesome. Like, that's exactly who Utah is Bryson Barnes. And, like, and that's really, at least from the Ute fan psyche, that's who we are. And, like, and I think that once we learn to respect each other in the Big 12 circles and the Utah circles, and we can give that mutual respect and we can celebrate victories and Ute fans feel like they're respected in the conference, I think a lot of that venom is going to go away too. But really, that's kind of what Ute fans really want, desire, because we've had to fight for it for so hard. And like, had to play teams like UFC for the last 12 years that just thumb their nose and treat us like smug nothings, right? Like they just walk all over us. They think they're so much better. And so we've come from that place too. Now stepping in, I guess we're just a school looking for the respect that we think that we've kind of earned on the field. And ultimately, you know, playing in the Big 12, and we're going to have to prove it on the field anyway. But I think that place, we'll get there eventually. It just is going to take some time.
Well, I think we can all agree to hate Texas, Oklahoma, USC, and UCLA with all of our beings.
I think Utah is more like the schools in the Big 12.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Utah and Big 12 fans realize. I think Utah fans will find that out fairly quickly upon arrival. So, Wild Man, it's been a pleasure to have you on. I don't think this will be the last time. So do me a favor. Where can everybody find you on social media, give you a follow so they can find themselves a good Utah fan and start to build a better relationship for a better tomorrow?
Sure thing. So find me on Twitter X at The Wild Ute. I also am the co-host to the Holy Rival Show on YouTube and the Big 12 Mafia Show, regular contributor over there on YouTube as well. So that's where you can find me, and let's keep the conversation going, guys, because let's get a little tighter vibes and stuff, you know. Let's integrate this relationship. And you know what? If Utah has to be the heel and the bad guy for the betterment of the Big 12 brand, then so be it.
Someone
Kansas
has
State,
to fall on
Kansas
that sword.
State might like to give up that role. So,
Wild, appreciate it, man. And we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, take care, guys.
All right, we got games to recap. Let's dive in. Let's get to it. Let's roll through. Oklahoma 31, UCF 29. Oklahoma survives a visit from UCF. After having a week off, like, Okay, it's the first time Oklahoma hasn't covered a spread all season. OU is far from their best, and the run game was disappointing. We're going to have to do a little bit of a deep dive on that one to take a deeper look. I think Brent Bettles said it best. Like, if you want a positive takeaway, is that OU would have lost this game last year. Like, he was asked this year to last year, OU would have lost this game last year. And hell, Lincoln Riley probably would have lost this game, considering what, you know, we saw from Lincoln Riley this past 2 weeks and what we saw from Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, and he was good for a good loss like this. So if you want a positive for Oklahoma, it's you survived at home against a UCF team that made some mistakes and you didn't down the stretch. For UCF, still winless in the Big 12. By the way, UCF is now 0-4 on two-point conversions this season, and all of them have been trick play attempts. Gus, you have John Rhys Plumlee back. I don't know. Maybe just, you know, use him. Run a play with him. You know, you're good quarterback. I don't know. Or keep trying trick plays that aren't going to work.
Yeah, that was a really weird ending to that game. Like, it felt to me like they were trying too hard to do something that Oklahoma wouldn't see coming, not realizing that Oklahoma's athletes are a whole lot better anyway. Like, unless you just find the perfect thing to completely, you know, just surprise them like no other, you're better off just running what got you successful and got you down into the end zone in the first place.
Yeah. The good news for UCF, Charlie Hustle keeps teasing some like release, and I'm ready to stop being teased and tickled and actually, like, you know.
Yeah, seriously.
Can we have the goods, Charlie Hustle? We're waiting. I'm gonna start emailing constantly until we find out what that is. Luckily for you, when it comes out, you can use the promo code 10-12-15, TEN1215 at Charlie Hustle and get 15% off all non-sale items. Charlie Hustle is a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel, completely officially licensed collegiate apparel. Fantastic stuff. They've got one of my favorite Citronaut shirts. They've teased another Citronaut shirt, and I'm like, I need one. I need that new Big 12 shirt that they put out.
Yes, I was going to say, in the vein of our earlier discussion, the Kansas City Skyline Big 12 shirt goes so hard.
It's a damn good shirt. It is a fantastic shirt that is available now at charliehustle.com. They've got more than 30 schools to choose from. That is 13 of the 14 current Big 12 schools. I know Cincinnati, if you're a Cincinnati fan and you're like, we're still mad because Charlie Hustle doesn't have our stuff, just tweet at Cincinnati's athletic department and tell them to give Charlie Hustle the licensing. I promise it's not because Charlie Hustle's just like,
right.
No,
we don't want them. I saw a couple people like so mad that they were promoting the league and their new Big 12 shirt. Like, why would you put this out before you have Cincinnati? It's like, I don't know, maybe because your school's dragging their feet, probably.
It's never because of the apparel company. It's always because of the athletic department and the university. So if you're mad, then don't tweet at Charlie Hustle. Just tag them in the tweet at your own university and say, give us Charlie Hustle gear so we can use 10-12-15 for 15% off all non-sale items. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh.
By the way, that needs to be the tweet. Like, include the promo code and everything. Say that that's why you want it.
Tag us in it, too. You can tag us in everything. Tag us in it all. They've got Colorado, too. No Utah yet. I'm sure they'll work on those as well. Speaking of surviving, Texas 31, Houston 24. Two things are true here. The third down spot on Houston's final drive was terrible. That was a first down.
Easily that was a first down.
I don't want, so Texas and OU fans, especially after Saturday's games, I don't want to hear anything about the refs are against you. No, that was a terrible spot. All that said, Dana, you have Donovan Smith at quarterback, who's playing incredible. He was 32 of 46 for 378, three touchdowns and an interception. He runs the ball well. He's on a four-game stretch that's been fantastic and everything I thought we would see from Donovan Smith at some point. And that was the play call you went with? Even if he had completed that pass, which was going to be a difficult pass as it was, like, it's still a bad play call. That was a terrible play call on fourth and inches. Use your quarterback's legs. He's got good ones. He'll run it for you. Like, terrible play call. Should have been a first down. That game should have been tied and gone to overtime unless Dana wanted to go for two and pull out something to try and get the win, which probably would have been a good idea, and I would not have blamed him for doing that. That would have been a good call if you went for two after you had the chance to tie the game. That fourth and inches call, terrible call.
We need a shirt saying, should have been a tush push.
Should have been a tush. Yeah.
No, it was a really bad idea.
Out of context, that shirt doesn't play well.
Well, you know what, though? Sometimes the best shirts are the ones that don't play well out of context.
No. For chaps. Just like Oklahoma, Texas loses this game last year, the year before that. Like this again, I'm giving credit to Oklahoma and Texas for not losing a game that they normally would have lost. I think it says a lot about both programs. Texas was better inside the opponent 30 on Saturday than they have been for a while. I know it was Houston. Quinn Ewers got injured on a sack and was knocked out of that game at the end of the third quarter. There is no official report from the university, but we did hear from Anwar Richardson of Orange Bloods on Sunday evening, quote, according to sources, Texas quarterback Quinn Ewers sustained an AC joint sprain in his throwing shoulder against Houston. Side note, he injured his other shoulder last year, so now both shoulders have been injured. Back to the tweet. The injury occurred on a sack. There is optimism he will play again this season. As of Sunday night, there is no timetable for his return. Should learn more this week. So, no Quinn Ewers for a little while.
And for some context, that's the exact same injury that Jalen Daniels for Kansas had last year that kept him out for, I believe it was for 6 games. So, there's or 6 weeks, including a bye week in there. So, yeah, it's not a great injury to have, especially if you're, you know, a quarterback that wants to be able to throw the ball down the field.
So you're looking at probably a super optimistic view of 4 weeks, a more realistic view of 6. They have 5 games left on the schedule. So him back before the Big 12 championship games, probably going to be them pushing him back. This will be a very interesting with the stretch they have left. BYU at home.
He is coming back to play against Iowa State. He's throwing for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns.
But they're all going to be shovel passes behind the line.
Yeah. BYU at home. That's fine because BYU is not any good in the daytime. If that was a night game, the Vampires would rise up. Kansas State at home, at TCU, at Iowa State, and then Texas Tech at home to close out the season. I'm going to just say, like, Quinn Ewers isn't the reason Texas has been as successful as they have so far this season. It's been the defense being as good as it has. Quinn Ewers has been solid. The run, Jonathan Brooks, has been fantastic. And so, like, can Texas survive that stretch well enough to still make it to Arlington? Absolutely. Absolutely. Because then it's going to come down to, let's say they lose another game. Like, it'll just come down to who is that loss to and tiebreakers from there. So, but they do have two of the teams that they are currently tied with in the Big 12 standings at 3-1, Kansas State and Iowa State, still on the schedule. So it does make the rest of the season more interesting for Texas. I do hope Quinn Ewers gets back quickly and does recover fully. Let's move on down the list. BYU, a lot more than Texas Tech. I'm kidding, 27-14. BYU first half, they won the turnover battle 3-0 and turned Texas Tech over on downs on a wild fourth down that was a recovered fumble at the BYU 4. So, yes, technically they won the battle 3-0. I'll tell it 4 turnovers for BYU in the first half. BYU only wins weird games. They play in weird games for the most part. When it's not weird, it's like TCU last week. Texas Tech has been playing in a lot of weird games this season. It's not shocking BYU won this. For one, Jake Strong was the quarterback for Texas Tech. He threw 3 interceptions. He's thrown a lot of picks since he came in. Has he got 6 interceptions now? I need to go back and look at the second half of last week's game. I think he's got like 6 picks at this point in the season, Jake Strong.
Yes,
at least
does.
5, 6.
Two touchdowns, 6 interceptions.
Woof. Woof. Texas Tech needs they have the week off this week. They need that week off badly, and they really need Shuck or Morton to get healthy enough to come back after the idle week.
Yeah, I mean, this was the concern, right, for Texas Tech, was like, is the quarterback.
It is every year.
I know, but like, you know, a lot of people were thinking that Texas Tech had an opportunity to be a dark horse in the Big 12, and it was always going to come down to, well, I mean, obviously it wasn't even before then, but it was always going to come down to the health of their quarterback. The minute that Shuck went down with an injury, you had to think that it was going to be very difficult for them to claw back from, you know, from the hole that they've dug themselves at this point.
Well, also, you know, the offensive line and the defense, other things also were going to.
Well, yeah, but.
Also, hey, Jaden York of Texas Tech, don't spit in people's faces. Just want to remind.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Honestly,
I saw the back and forth between, did he flip the fans off as he was running up the tunnel? Somebody got a shot of it. It looked like he was doing guns up instead of the birds, double birds. I don't know. All I know is don't spit in people's faces. You got kicked out of the game for spitting in someone's face. Like,
I also heard that he tripped and ate the ground on his way out, which
apparently ate it.
Apparently there were some people that were very pleased with that outcome. So I hope he's not hurt, but
okay.
You know, it is karma.
As for BYU, defense is still okay. Run game is still non-existent. And if Keaton Slovis is good, they will win. If the defense can play well, they will win. If Keaton Slovis isn't good, TCU last week. BYU is now 2-2 in conference play with a win over the incumbent 10. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. If I told you coming into the season that BYU would be the best of the newcomers, I think people might have been a little bit shocked. If I told you that they would have 2 wins and that the other 3 newcomers combined would be 1-11, I think we all might have been just a little bit surprised. But that's what it is now. It's 2-2 BYU, 1-11 Houston, UCF, and Cincinnati.
Now, how many of those losses came against other new teams, though? Because I know that, like, BYU beat Cincinnati, so that one is, like, someone's got to win that, you know, of the new schools. But I don't think
played. UCF has not played any of the newcomers. They have a road game at Cincinnati and a home game against Houston still on the schedule. Houston has not yet. They will play Cincinnati and UCF. And so, like, but the argument here is like, well, they haven't got a chance to play each other. Like,
well, right. Okay? I mean, it's still, you know, 1-2 against the incumbent 10 versus 0-10. Like, it's still pretty bad.
It's not great. It's not great. It's not great. We will see. I picked BYU to win this game because Texas Tech issues. And BYU, like, if you're going to put them in a weird game, I'm going to pick them. If they're just going to go up a team who's flat out better than them, they're going to lose. Like, I'm not going to pick BYU to win. Maybe cover. We'll see. But if they're going to have a weird game, but man, the game against Texas next week, we'll talk about it. But it's just got, like, Malik Murphy comes out and has great Malik Murphy game written all over it. Like, it's kind of like Hoover for TCU coming out against BYU and just blasting BYU and then turning around this week, which is a game we'll talk about in a minute, and getting absolutely blasted. Baylor 32, Cincinnati 29. Baylor is no longer the worst team in the Big 12. They are 2-2 in conference play. Now, granted, both those wins are over newcomers, and close wins over newcomers. Cincinnati, welcome to the bottom. You're now the worst team in the Big 12. Congratulations. Bravo. Bravo. Baylor, like, I'm still not going to get, like, I still don't think there's any Baylor fan who's like, ah, everything's fixed and all things are turned around and life is good and the sun is shining, the birds are singing. It's like, we got to win and we're going to celebrate that. And that's perfectly fine. You should be enjoying that win. You should be enjoying being 3-4 now. You still have Houston on the schedule, so you've got another chance for what should be a win. The rest of the slate is incumbent teams, so we'll see how that goes. For Cincinnati, Justin Hiles of Viva the Cats was supposed to be joining us tonight. He couldn't make it. Had some stuff going on. But he tweeted out on the Twitters, in one singular tweet, tell us how you would flip this Bearcats program around to win 6 games before the end of the season. My answer is build a time machine, go back to December, and don't hire Scott Satterfield.
Yeah, I mean, you know it's bad when the place he came from is, like, rejoicing about the fact that you hired him away. So,
and in contention to be in the ACC championship.
Yeah, that's it's not great. For Baylor, I'm wondering, is Baylor one of those teams that wants to be on the road in conference the rest of the year? Because for whatever reason, they seem to play better on the road. I don't know if it's just opponents, but they seem to be, I don't know. I don't know. It's just they have two road wins, and yes, it's against the new school, so maybe that has more to do with it than them actually being on the road. But they definitely seem to be playing better away, you know, from their home stadium, which is not something you ever really want to be the case.
Well, they've only played away from their home stadium twice all season. So
fair,
small sample size.
And they came in.
So what? Whoa! So that makes
historic,
it even better.
Historic comeback performance
on the road on this the road. Year.
Yes, they're 2-0 on the road and 0-4. Oh no, sorry, 2-0 on the road, 1-4.
1-4 at home.
And the one win is not an FBS victory. At this point, like, Baylor has basically guaranteed they won't finish in last place in Big 12 play. In my opinion, like, that's what they've done by winning two games.
Yep.
Because they now own tiebreakers over UCF and Cincinnati. So at least through tiebreakers, Baylor will not finish 14th this year.
Again, a very low bar to clear, but they've cleared it.
I'll say this. Dave Aranda is not going to get fired. Doesn't matter what happens the rest of the way. He's not getting fired. He will still be there. They owe him too much money. They like him way too much. There's going to be a coaching staff shakeup in Waco this offseason.
Yeah, this is going to be the Tom Herman completely revamped the entire assistant coaches. Over at Baylor, like we had at Texas right before Harmon got fired. For Aranda, let's hope it worked out better than what it did for Herman.
Will Scott Satterfield be a worse hire for someone than Chad Morris was for Arkansas? That's the bar of which I'm now starting to wonder if this is going to, I feel bad for Cincinnati fans. Like, I do. Like, they were very excited about joining the Big 12. You had it made in the shade, then you hired Satterfield, and I think even Cincinnati fans were like, no, this could work out. This could be a good hire. It might be okay. It's not been good. Let's move on. That's enough ranting on those two fan bases. Oklahoma State 48, West Virginia 34. Here's my thing for West Virginia. I thought Garrett Green looked really good. I like Garrett Green. I think he plays well. The more I've watched of him, the better he's looked throughout the season. Like, I'm not going to blame the offense. I'm not going to blame Garrett Green. I'm putting this on the defense. The defense that I praise on this show has looked bad for two straight weeks. Neil Brown after the game, we're up 24-20 in the fourth quarter and we don't get it done. You have to figure out ways to win when you're up 24-20 at home. Yes, that's true. It's not just the defense has looked bad two straight weeks. Or blown leads in the fourth quarter for two straight weeks. It's that in quarters 1-3 the last 2 weeks, the defense has given up an average of about 7 points a quarter. It's pretty good. In the fourth quarter against Houston, they gave up 20. In the fourth quarter against Oklahoma State, they gave up 28. What the hell's happening to West Virginia's defense in the fourth quarter of the last two games that they've gone from like playing solid football to just, oops, we forgot how to stop the opposing team. You gave up 20 to Houston and 28 points to Oklahoma State in the fourth quarter. Like, those are two collapses. And I know the Houston game was weird and you lose on an insane Hail Mary and all that, but like, now you've got 2 weeks in a row. Remember, once is an occurrence, twice is a coincidence, three times is a pattern. We're a week away from saying, like, you got real problems in the fourth quarter, West Virginia. What are you going to do about it? Because that's two weeks in a row where you have given up 20-plus points in the fourth quarter to lose a game in which you were winning.
Yeah, this game specifically just kind of reminds me of the whole time is a flat circle thing. Because we're right back now where, you know, Neil Brown is potentially has his team playing him into getting fired again, even though I don't think that West Virginia can actually afford it right now. But, you know, we went from thinking that West Virginia was going to be a really good team to... Or I'm sorry, we thought they were going to be a really bad team to being a really good team to now what's going on? Like, are they actually a bad team again? I don't know what to make of this team anymore. I thought for a while they kind of had things figured out, and it's pretty clear that I don't think anybody knows what's going on in West Virginia, including, you know, the people that are actually running the program. So I'm a little concerned if I'm a West Virginia fan about, like, what does this mean? Because I don't think that they can afford to fire Neil Brown. But if the program is going to get any better, they probably need to fire him. And I don't like to be the guy calling for his head, but like you looked at what he, every single time they take a step forward, they take a huge step back as well, not very long after. And so something's got to change. And I just don't know what you can do at West Virginia besides shaking up the whole thing and starting over.
Yeah, I'm really curious if at this point West Virginia fans are like really regretting that little blip of success there, because like you felt like, okay, if the season's a complete like tank job, maybe they like have to figure out something to do about Brown. But now, okay, there's been some solid games, but now you're kind of regressing, and you're left with like, okay, what's the actual reality of the team here? Are they going to use it as justification to keep them around? Because as we have discussed ad nauseum, the financials of getting in a new coaching staff are rough at best. So it's a very weird kind of spot for them to be in.
Yeah, this feels to me a lot like the success that Kansas saw under David Beatty when they upset Texas, right? Like, some things went really weird that made you look really good, and unfortunately, the athletic department like overreacted to that horribly. The hope is that the same thing isn't happening at West Virginia, where they talked themselves into keeping Neil Brown for another 2 or 3 years, because it might work. Like, we've seen four now, you know, we've seen multiple years of this. It doesn't appear to be getting too much better. There are going to be highlights because every team has something wacky happen, but I just don't know moving forward. And I feel for, you know, a lot of the West Virginia fans that I know. I've been there. I know how horrible it is to feel like you actually finally are getting out of there, and then you just get drugged right back down to like, hey, this really sucks. Is it ever actually going to get better? Because that's what it feels like looking from the outside right now.
I'm at this point, I'm going to say, I don't think West Virginia was as good as the 4-1 start made them seem. I also don't think they're quite as bad as this 0-2 skid makes them seem. Like, I still think they're just a middle of the pack Big 12 school who's having a 2-game weird down. Like, that Houston game is weird. You faced Oklahoma State and a team that you played a close game, and then weird stuff happened. Like, I maybe just going to get weird the rest of the way. They've got UCF, BYU, OU, Cincinnati, Baylor. Like, they've got 4 wins. Like, I can find 2 wins on the schedule to get a bowl game. Like, if it's just, we just need to get to a bowl game for Neil Brown to survive another year. And I kind of think that West Virginia, as far as an athletic department, would prefer he do well enough to stick around another year so they can save one when they fire him. But, like, I don't know. Like, I hate this West Virginia fans. I'm not going to rescind my apology, but, you know, you guys need to earn it back again a little bit.
I will say, at least we can look forward to the weird game that's going to be West Virginia versus BYU.
We'll talk about some games here in a second. Game ball goes to Ollie Gordon, Oklahoma State running back. Good Lord. 29 carries for 282 yards and 4 touchdowns in this game. Let me tell you what he did in the fourth quarter. 9 carries, 149 yards, and 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter against West Virginia. He had 21 of the 28 points scored. Per PFF, Ollie Gordon had 194 yards after contact. Oh, he had 8 runs of 10-plus yards. 3 of those were touchdowns, which means West Virginia only tackled him downfield like 5 times.
Ouch.
Sir, the first team running back list for the Big 12 at the end of the season is going to be an interesting battle between Jonathan Brooks, Ollie Gordon, Devin Neal, and Taj Brooks, because you only get
two.
Two?
I think they do 2 running backs and a fullback.
And usually they put a fullback there from Oklahoma or Kansas State. That will be interesting.
Jared Casey from Kansas. No.
I've talked some trash on Gundy here recently, so I'm going to give him the props that I think he deserves at this point. This was his 400th game at Oklahoma State as either a player, assistant coach, or head coach. I think that's, OSU looked it up, it's like the third longest streak. At least third longest active. I know that Ferentz is longer than that. Shout out to Pistols Firing for this one. Gundy's 400th game and his 161st win as a head coach also tied him for third for most Big 12 wins. He's now tied with Mac Brown for 98 conference wins. So Gundy's got 98 Big 12 wins. That's tied for third with Mac Brown. Bob Stoops is the leader at 121. Bill Snyder is at 104. There is a chance that Mike Gundy will retire with the most Big 12 victories. Sir, tip of the freaking cowboy hat. This is, it's not bad. That's not a bad thing to
I mean, it's a testament to being good enough to amass some wins and also being good enough to make sure you stick around longer than the average coach. So, it's impossible to turn that into a bad thing or to, you know, take away from it. It's definitely for all of the, I guess, shots that he's taken from, you know, other fan bases or from even from Oklahoma State fans, the fact that he's been able to be that successful for that long is really something.
Kansas State 41, TCU 3. The two quarterback system is working for Kansas State. Now, neither Howard or Johnson were great through the air. They both run the ball really damn well. And again, as an Oklahoma State fan, thank you for waiting an extra week before you brought Avery Johnson out and started using him more in this two quarterback system. Look, if you got two quarterbacks, you don't have one, unless you're Kansas State this year, in which case, if you have two quarterbacks, you have a really good quarterback. Avery's played well. Howard's been, I don't know.
It's if you have two decent quarterbacks, you have one really good quarterback masquerading as a running back.
They combined to go 15 of 26 for 244 and four touchdowns through the air. They had 20 carries for 135 yards on the ground. So all in all, not bad. Granted, TCU sucks.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to be honest, this feels a lot more, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Kansas State because they still look, you know, really good and they seem to be hitting their stride, but this is, says a lot more to me about just how far TCU's fallen in the year after they went to the national championship game. They just do not look at all. And yes, obviously Chandler Morris being hurt, you know, hurts their offense quite a bit, but the defense was supposed to be decent this year. Like, it was supposed to still be one of the strengths of the team, and it just looks awful. It's snap after snap. It's just bad.
I just want to say that one of my very favorite bits from the weekend was, I believe it was Cyclone Larry on Twitter tagging every big football school, Bama, USC, all them, talking about how incredible Avery Johnson is and how they need to send him the bag to try and transfer. That was, when I saw one, I was like, that's funny. When I saw multiple to different schools, I was like, yeah, I respect that hustle. It was good. Everyone was, as a insert school here diehard fan, I demand that you bring in this young man, Avery Johnson. No notes. Incredible.
Oh, Twitter shenanigans. Twitter is better with him active on it. Look, for TCU, like I say, they suck. They're just not good. Like, they're not this bad. It is funny to me that, like, TCU blows out BYU last week and then gets absolutely curb stomped. Oh no, don't say curb stomped. Kansas State this week. Like, they're just not good. And it's such a massive drop off. And it's not just like we can make all the jokes we want about Kendall Briles being the OC and was it worth it? Like, was it actually worth it?
No.
But it's not just that. Like, you lost Max Duggan and Kendra Miller and Amari DeMarcado and Steve Avila and Quentin Johnson, and that's just the offense. And so, like, this goes back to the whole Big 12. I meant to take some time today, and every time I was trying to, suddenly there was a child at my knees asking for something or yelling from the bathroom that they had gone poop. And so I wanted to put the whole list together because I've done it in the past and I've lost the note about, like, the non-OU teams in the Big 12 championship game and what the record is the year after. And it's typically like meh. Like, it's not necessarily like losing record, but usually you get a lot of like 6-6 and 7-5s and just kind of like meh seasons, like Baylor and Oklahoma State did last year after coming off the Big 12 championship, and when OSU went 7-5 and Baylor went 6-6. And so you look at it this year, and like Kansas State could kind of be the outlier and have a better than average season for teams who were in the Big 12 championship game. But like TCU looks like most of the teams who get there not named Oklahoma, and the next year it's kind of like, we're not good anymore. We'll go back to development and get this turned around, and we'll be back here in a couple of seasons. So Yeah. Maybe we'll wait till next week. Next week we can do the like who's making a bowl and who's not. Because at this point, only two teams have reached bowl eligibility, Oklahoma and Texas. There are a few that are one game away. Oklahoma State, Kansas, and BYU. There you go. Iowa State, West Virginia, and TCU still need two wins. Everyone else needs three or more. Let's do it next week. Speaking of next week, let's wrap the show up the way we do every Monday. Let's look to the week ahead and which games we need to keep an eye on. Next week is our last week. It's our last idle week in the Big 12. After next week, everyone will be in action every weekend until the end of the season. I believe TCU and Texas Tech are idle this coming weekend. So let me read you the slate in chronological order. Each of us will pick a game that we have circled. You cannot pick your team. At 11 o'clock, big noon kickoff, we get Oklahoma at Kansas in Lawrence. Also at 11, ESPN2, Kansas State hosting Houston. And 11 a.m. on FS1, the Shine Bowl. Shout out to CFB Home on Twitter for this one. It's Sunshine versus Moonshine, UCF hosting West Virginia.
Oh, my gosh.
That's good.
It needs a logo now where like one side is the moon and the other side is the sun.
No, it's got to be one side is a moonshine jug and the other.
Well, right. No, but like, you know, like a mason jar where the little emblem in the middle is like half moon, half sun.
It's just the three X's in the, it was funny in my head. And the first time I've said it out loud, it's even funnier here. It said 2:30, we get BYU at Texas on ABC on ESPN Plus. We get the battle for the tent trophy. Baylor hosting Iowa State. Iowa State Baylor fans get that joke.
I make
a lot of dumb trophies, and I have a lot of stupid things I've built in Illustrator, and my fake trophy collection is beginning to grow. One of these years I'm going to actually like make one of these for real. I need to make the tent trophy.
Get like a 3D printer so you can just like print a version of it.
It's just too good. We capped the day off.
I'm going to get the Farmageddon trophy, but it's going to be a full tractor that I keep in my backyard.
I like it. Only one night game. Oklahoma State homecoming hosting Cincinnati at 7 o'clock on ESPN2. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, pick your favorite game of the weekend. It cannot be your team. JSJ.
First of all, shout out to Eric Steyer. I believe will be live in the stands in Waco, since he lives down there now in Texas. So we'll hopefully see a Cyclone victory. I will choose Kansas, Oklahoma, because honestly, the rest of this slate, besides my own game, looks like a pile of garbage. First of all,
don't complain about college football. We only have a few weeks left of it. Okay?
First of all, I don't know who you're talking to about complaining about college football.
Philip, you step in that one.
Fine. JSJ, which volleyball game are you looking forward to? Match are you looking forward to this weekend in the Big 12?
See, that honestly is valid, and I will give you an answer after Andy tells you his football game.
All right. Andy.
Yeah, look, this obviously is the game that I'm – or not the game that I'm picking because I'm not allowed to, but not only is Kansas and Oklahoma the big noon Saturday game that comes on at 11, it is also hosting Big Noon Kickoff, the ESPN College Game Day-like show. So for the second straight season, the Kansas Jayhawks are hosting a national pregame show on location. Definitely looking forward to this being the norm moving forward. You know, Kansas getting to host these things more often than not. I'm kind of with JSJ on this one. I'm not really sure which one of these games is actually going to be worth watching. Like the only one that is less than a touchdown on the line is the Iowa State Baylor one. And I don't know how much I'm actually looking forward to watching that game. I might watch it because it's going to be the most competitive, but it's not going to tell me anything, I think, about either of these teams. I think that they both have their, you know, issues that we know that they have. And really the question is, can Baylor actually win at home against a Big 12 opponent this year? But I do think the one that's probably the most has the most potential for intrigue would be West Virginia UCF. You know, is West Virginia this bad? You know, as they've been the last couple of weeks, is John Rhys Plumlee as good as he was against Oklahoma? Can UCF actually come back and you know, get their first Big 12 victory at home? So it goes up against the game, and I'm going to be honest, I'm probably not going to get to watch too much of it because I'll be too busy covering KU and Oklahoma, but that's probably the one I'm going to be the most intrigued to go back and watch and to like kind of look at the highlights from.
All right.
First of all, go ahead, Jamie.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was going to give you my answer, but if you're responding to Andy. Okay.
No, go ahead and give your answer, and then I will diatribe.
Well, it's a very easy one because Baylor and Texas play on Thursday and Friday, and those will be very, very good matches. So that is my answer.
There you go. First of all, how dare all of you to besmirch this weekend of Big 12 football because it's not up to your particular standards, okay? To act like this weekend isn't chock full of potential storylines is insulting and just feeds into the Mandel anti-Big 12 BS narrative that apparently we're trying to battle internally as well as externally.
No, let me put it this way.
No, I'm not done with my diatribe, and you're going to sit there with your finger pointing in the air and wait patiently. First off, how dare you insult a trophy game like the Battle for the Tent Trophy, Iowa State in Waco at Baylor.
I wasn't allowed to pick it.
Can Iowa State continue this turnaround coming off of an idle week? Is Baylor going to beat anybody who's not a newcomer? Like, we've got a game between two teams that really just don't like each other. It is a more of a rivalry game than just the joke trophy I've invented. Texas is not going to have Quinn Ewers. Malik Murphy is going to be out there. We can make jokes about BYU sucks in the daytime, but BYU's beaten Texas quite a few times in the past. Does Malik Murphy do enough to help Texas keep on keeping on? UCF, West Virginia. West Virginia's on a two-game skid trying to turn things around. UCF hasn't won a Big 12 game yet. It's got a name now in the Shine Bowl. God, it's never not going to be fun. I'm referring to it for that forever.
It should every just be the little fun. Mario shine. Just to be a different thing. A different third thing.
Oh, my gosh.
Kansas State, Houston, like Kansas State coming into the season was our best hope for a non-Texas Oklahoma Big 12 championship game. Things looking like they may have turned it around and that can still be that answer. Oklahoma at Kansas, like, can Kansas do it? Could Kansas do it?
They can. I don't know if they will, but
I'm not going to pick them too, but could they? And Oklahoma State, talking about turnarounds of the season, they got beaten 33-7 at home to South Alabama, and now they're 3-1 in conference play and hosting a Cincinnati team who's 0-4 in conference play. Ollie Gordon setting just ridiculous run. Come on.
Let me put it this way. If I expect a weekend like this to end up in a whole bunch of chaos, it's not going to happen. So
no,
I'm going to insult these games, and so everybody can get mad at me and then can show me how wrong I was so that we can have a really fun college football weekend.
Sleep on a weekend of college football, you dare. There are only 5 weekends of the regular season left. And then it's, look, all the college basketball and Tampa football season's over, except for bowl games. Okay? College basketball's almost here. I'm going to have the Midwest Madness podcast going as soon as I line up hosts. We're going to have basketball.
College basketball, which is so much better.
And then it's college softball. It's fine. Okay. It's going to be a good weekend of Big 12 football. You never know what could happen. We'll see what happens. All right. And then we get week 10, and oh, God, I wish I hadn't reminded myself what game was in week 10. Ooh. I'm going to like not. I'm just going to take that week off because I'm going to be an emotional wreck. I just know it. It's going to not be good. It's going to get real ugly. Going to stock the coffers full of booze and other
week 10 is going to be so much fun though. I mean, there's a good chance I might be up in Ames. So,
oh, that's a good game. Week 10, Kansas at Iowa State, UCF Cincinnati. That's a rivalry. Houston Baylor, Kansas State, Texas, BYU, West Virginia, TCU, Texas
look,
Tech.
Look. This is
Oklahoma
the undercard.
Oklahoma State are not playing. They're just they're having an extra idle.
Yeah, this is the undercard week. Next week is the main event.
All right, fine. Let's get all of you. I'm going to watch the Tent Trophy and see who takes it home. Print that thing out for
I think
real.
The bigger question is Iowa State going to be able to put up a tent this year?
All right, that's enough. You can find us on Twitter at 1012 Network, T-E-N, the number 12, the word network. Please subscribe to the Patreon. We'll get some more. Jamie, you got any more of them tarot cards?
I certainly could.
I've got something I'm cooking up that hopefully I'll be able to put out there related to college basketball as well. So
if it's if anyone is your week nine sucks take.
No, if anybody watched Big 12 Media Days, I'll just say dogs at the dog park.
Yes. Oh, God, that quote.
It was great.
Samson. I'll pull some I'll pull some cards after I film my next. Yeah,
look, I was worried. I was worried about the overall comedic quality of Big 12, but men's basketball tip off with Huggins no longer there. But Kelvin Sampson fills that niche just perfectly.
Subscribe to the 1012 Network Patreon for more coming up soon. Jamie Steyer Johnson's on Twitter at JSTEYZ. She has been doing some video previews for the women's basketball teams in the Big 12. They are fantastic. Go and watch them. Listen to Jamie as she lays out just how smart she is. You'll learn a lot. At AndyMitz12 on Twitter for AndyMitz. Also go check out Blue Wings Rising. Okay. Shop at charliehustle.com. 10, 12, 15, 15% off non-sale items. We'll be back on Thursday to make picks for all of this week's Big 12 games. It's our last week with a guest, and we've got a great one lined up. We will talk to you all then.
Podcast Network.